This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on location with Ramika Bingham Risher, who has written a book that is not only about history, but will go down in history. Ramika, tell us what it's about. What's the title of your book, and what is in this fabulous book?
Well, I mean, that introduction alone can do it for me. But the book is called Room Swept Home. Oh, I love it. I love it when we both hold it up, Grace. The book is called Room Swept Home, and it's about my grandmothers. It's about my third great grandmother, paternal grandmother, Minnie Foulkes, who was interviewed for the WPA Slave Narratives in the 1940s and lived in Petersburg, Virginia. And then, just in a strange twist of fate, my maternal grandmother, Mary Knight, was also sent to Petersburg, Virginia, and they were, unbeknownst to them, but within 1 mile of each other, because she was sent to Petersburg to the Central Asylum for the Negro Insane after birthing her first child with postpartum. And so I wanted to tell their stories because I thought it was just a tremendous twist of kismet that they intersected and then eventually ushered in the Foulkes who would usher in me, and then tell some of the story of, you know, the nation as it stands and how, you know, I bloom into that becoming. So
Ramika bloomed into that becoming is a perfect way to say this. Please read us a little bit of this poem.
I absolutely will. I'm going to start with birth story, Minnie's birth story. What's interesting is it's not only a book of poems, but there are images, there's a beautiful family tree and historical photos. And when you're doing a book like this, you have all kinds of archival research. And one of the first things I stumbled on that I thought was a little strange was that in the slave birth indices, which I didn't even know existed, the Virginia Slave Birth Index, it seemed that, you know, every slave was born on Christmas or New Year's Day. And obviously we know that's not the truth. We know eventually those days were assigned to them. But I thought it was only fair that Minnie got to tell her own birth story. I wasn't born on Christmas, though this is what some folks will tell you. Some folks say everyone born slave was born on Christmas or New Year's Day. Some folks always lying. Some pretend we don't know how we got here or when, but I am made of memory and the impossible long hour. I cherish every part that was mine or my mother's. And she'd tell you too, I came in the world with the sun bearing its full heat, the day as steady as the pain. She swept through the pallet of hay on the floor, the dirt and rocks felt like coals underneath her. A friend there, rooted, a woman I'd call aunt for years, gray-headed and firm, had a guiding hand the children knew to follow. Pressed on the belly, held mother's hips in place, helped her stand when laying down wouldn't move me. Found grease to ease me out with the water and blood, and I remember what my mother said the woman told her, told me. God brought you here. God made you free. Jesus was born outdoors on a night when the shepherds slept in the fields free from frost, no snow. Christmas wasn't his day either, but someone somewhere saw fit to give him what they thought he deserved, what suited them. Save the truth for later.
Room swept home. Room swept home. Every line has a pulsation under it. Every word is alive and human. There is blood and veins under every, it is not just language. Your heart and soul is in every line of this book. I don't even know how to describe it anymore. Tell us who Mary was and who Minnie was.
Yes, so Minnie, whose birth poem I just read, was my great-great-great paternal grandmother. She was born in 1859, was born enslaved in Chesterfield, Virginia, and was interviewed in her late 70s for the WPA Slave Narratives, and gave us kind of a really long, a beautiful, heart-wrenching, but true, very honest
And it
account.
takes the first section of the book. It's
Absolutely.
Minnie's. It's all Minnie's.
Her life, you know, and that's just a small portion of her life. She went on to, you know, kind of be a businesswoman and an entrepreneur and sold with these other women in the town at the market and, you know, possibly learned to read very late in life and bought plots of land and sold to teachers and grew the Black neighborhood. So there's so much about her life that was worth telling. And then Mary Knight is my maternal grandmother, who was very young when she intersected with Minnie in Petersburg. She was only 18 years old, and so I knew Mary personally. You know, she was my grandmother and dear friend up until her death, 2007, January 2007. And so she not only had that incident where she sent to this asylum after the birth of her first child, unfortunately, you know, made her way out of that, but then took care of seven other children, worked as a domestic for much of her life, became a woman of great faith that she passed on to us. And also just taught us that you know, you don't have to be a victim of your circumstance.
You know,
The
Mary,
second half of the book focuses on her.
I kept brooding about Mary because she said in one of her poems in her own voice that there was no afterbirth and no blood. Now, whether she imagined it, but
That's absolutely true. That's in the medical records.
I believe that was the cause of
That's right. It's blood poisoning. Absolutely.
exactly. It was
Great. Any of us can see it looking now, right?
Blood poisoning that went
Absolutely.
to her, and it should have killed her, really.
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
it chilled me what she went through. There's a great play about that. They called it the Insane Asylum, that it was off Broadway that you have got to see.
Know this play. I will now
Yes,
I will be looking for it.
it is. But to know that someone so dear was there, and it was pretty horrendous. It was pretty horrendous. But the thing, art saves. Art saves. You have transcended, you've taken very hard stories and just put your artist light on them until they gleam. So let's hear more. This is Ramika, and she is authoring this new book. It's hitting, I think it's really making a sensation already, but we're in on the first floor.
Well, since we've talked it up, I'll read one of Mary's poems. On the opposite page of the poem is a picture of the
Oh,
woman
the
working
pictures. We'll have to
in
talk
front
about
of the
that later.
asylum.
The pictures. Oh.
Yes. And so it actually the title takes it's a line from Victoria Chang's beautiful book, Obit. And the line is, a fish has broken from the water its rod of a body. And if anybody has Southern folks like I do, you know, if somebody dreams about fish, uh-oh, somebody's pregnant. So this harkens back to that and her time in the asylum where she kind of had to fight when she got home to get her baby back. A fish has broken from the water its rod of a body. A big, pretty fish, my sister-in-law says, after she has dreamt it, translucent and filled with bright copper-like fire. She is sure the child is coming to me, and I am filled with worry. My belly blooms, and I am wide as the unpaved walk along the path leading here to a place not mine, a middle place, not borrowed but used, a halfway living. This is a found baby poem. The child will come despite my fear and change me for good. The house will be filled with worry for her, even as I am willed away by what she broke or fixed in me. My sleep is restless in the house of no gods, no babies, no husbands, wing-clipped and sick with uselessness. The woman who dreams of my baby will raise her for the months I'm gone, then fight to keep her. But when I return, a better, brighter, more knowledgeable self, she must concede to the rightful, fierce hollow of me. Fish mother, spirit rider, woman wandered, brought to something like hell and back, always with a baby on the brain to call and quell the lightning.
I don't know how you wrote that, Ramika Bingham Risher. I think it's your fifth book. Yeah. And so some of the others are Conversion, which won the Naomi Long Magid Poetry Award. What We Ask of Flesh was shortlisted for the Hurston Wright Legacy Award. Starlight and Error, the Diode winner of that book award, and finalist for the Library of Virginia, your memoir Soul Culture, published by Beacon Press, and now we have Room Swept Home. How did you get inside of that character? How did you occupy her psyche? What did you have to go through to pull that poem through you?
You know, Mary was a little bit easier to access than many because I knew Mary deeply. And what I found, we had to wait 75 years to get the medical records. So I had to wait until she had passed away to actually see the history. So it was kind of a combination of those things, the knowing what I saw in the records and some of the very small blips of things that she told me very late in her life. She never spoke about any of these incidents until very late in her life when she was, you know, close to passing. And so I knew that she, if nothing else, was always very fierce about her children, about caring for her children. So I couldn't imagine, you know, her coming home and her sister-in-law saying, well, just leave the baby with me, you know? And this was her first child, my Aunt Evelyn, who the book is dedicated to in part. And so I knew that she was very fierce about her children, but I was also in that poem, honestly, channeling someone else that you know well, Lucille Clifton.
Oh.
So that line, this is a found baby poem, is really hearkening back to Lucille Clifton, who has a found baby poem line as well, and was also a mother of six children and very fierce, and wrote about them quite a bit. So it's the combination of what I knew about my grandmother and about these women poets who I knew had been changed irrevocably for the better.
Is so interesting
that
you rested on your antecedent, because the power we get is from those who went before us.
Absolutely.
But it never occurred to me. I mean, I saw influences in your book of all the canon of great literature.
Thank you.
But that is so interesting about Lucille herself.
Absolutely.
And what hurt me the most about that poem was that she had to fight for her child when she got home.
Yeah.
I mean, she had been through enough, but that is terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she could have almost lost that baby because she had been institutionalized.
Right. And I mean, these are children we're talking about. You know, she's 18, you know, just been married. I mean, these are not, you know, people that are fully formed adults. Remember who you were at 18? I was, you know, a silly child.
I was crazy.
Child.
I was totally crazy.
Yes, I was a silly child. And so the fact that they had to, you know, kind of step into adulthood, and especially after an experience like this, after being in the asylum, you know, all her life she held that she was there for 9 months. She told me she was there long enough to have another baby. But
yeah, that's the way she put
records,
it. Yeah. That's so interesting to talk about chronology in terms of pregnancy.
Yes, she said long enough to have another baby, but she was there for, you know, 2 months and then had a year of parole where she had to check in. So after you've been through something like that, I'm not going to come home and tell me, right, that I can't now care for my baby. I've made it out of, like I said in the poem, to hell and back.
Yeah, but I don't, it's a miracle she got out.
That's right.
Some people did not.
Many, many people did not.
Oh, Rameka, you have made your indentation in the world. You've been in the New York Times, the Writer's Chronicle, Callaloo. You know, Callaloo has been going on since the 60s.
Ooh, and they just got a brand new editor. And
oh, who is it?
It's going to be beautiful. You know what? Don't get me the lion right off bat.
Okay.
I'll find her name for you. But, you know, it's a Latinx woman of color. And so we're all very excited to see what she does.
Essence, and Callaloo. Essence is time honored as well.
Yes.
So you have done a lot, as well as working 9 to 5. We'll talk about that at Old Dominion University. But right now we want to focus more on these people that are indelible. They will never die. They have been made permanent. They never knew when they were living that their offspring would make them immemorialized. They never knew it. Think of that.
Of course not. I mean, it's really, you know, the book starts with, and maybe this was really the impetus for the writing, as you asked me, it starts with an epigraph that is a quote from Minnie's WPA slave narrative. And she says, and I quote, "I just know if I could, if I knowed how to write and had a little learning, I could put off a book on this here situation.
And you did, and
I said, she does, obviously, she has said, you're going to do it. Somebody's going to do this. And so,
please read us
I was,
more.
absolutely compelled to make sure
But
to
we're
put
going to
off
tell
a
you,
book.
well, we know the what, but we're going to find out how you did it. So
Yeah.
please read us some more.
Sure.
Ramika,
Since
Ramika, Ramika.
we brought up Minnie's poem, I'll go back a little bit to Minnie's section. And so, like I said, she spent her first 6 or 7 years of life enslaved, and then kind of living, staying on the plantation for quite some time, as was the case with many of those enslaved. Emancipation happens, but where was there for people to go? And so she continued to build a life for herself. She was married. She was married and ended up having 11 children, 7 of whom survived. And so I was also trying to trace the historical record through these folks living, because of course, all the things that are happening in history are also happening to them personally. So I wondered, what her life was like during the 1920s and 30s, and particularly during the Great Depression, when I found out that so many of these women were the ones that were making a way. So this is in Minnie's voice, and this is, the Great Depression was hard to distinguish when poverty was always a way of life. 1931. Colored folks been broke. Depression ain't made it much worse. Breadwinners, whole streets of us, whole parishes, whole neighborhoods, women on the back end of everything running. Hard up, struggling, throwing rent parties, taking in laundry, in the kitchen, making plates or styling hair, make do however we can. The Poles don't want us, last hired at the factory, but we still exquisitely made. Hair turning back under sweat, dust clinging behind knees, and every dollar our own dollar. We gather at the old market on Saturdays with our wares, what's caught, cleaned, and scaled, cures with herbs and tincture, quilt scraps made into soft diamonds, North Stars, signs for devotion, covering. Some bought freedom here. Now, without having grown wings, we fill the sky. Every house with heat got a woman's hand in it. We the industry, we the communion, the engine and offering, the wheels turning.
Every page, every poem is a complete work of art. So you
Oh.
could not have written one a day. This
Oh
must have been
no.
stretched out, what, 7 years? How many years did it take?
That's exactly it, Grace. I tell everyone it took me at least 7 years to write, the scope of the book. But probably the oldest poem in the book is probably 10 years old, because the title poem, Room Swept Home, was written very early on, but about 7 years for the bulk of the work.
This is called patient writing. Patient writing. You
Yes.
couldn't, you can't dream in a hurry, can you?
Oh,
So
Grace.
you had to go
You
slow.
poet, you. You
No, but
always know exactly how to put it. You
I
can't
know
dream in a
you,
hurry.
Ramika. I know Ramika
Yes,
Bingham
you do.
Risher and what makes you tick.
Yes, you do.
So you got the idea, and then it was cooking inside of you, like Sterling Brown said of Ma Rainey, if you just get a hold of me
Yes.
some kind of way.
Oh, some
So
kind of
these
way.
people did. And
Yes.
then you proceeded to research it. Well, I saw the footnotes, and I can't believe the universities you had to go to. So tell us just what you think. How many hours do you think you researched this, all including the photographs and the history?
I mean, really, if I could
A
estimate this, I don't know,
thousand?
but I was about to say, but it has to be, if it's not high hundreds, it's thousands probably of hours. And because, I mean, that's what happens when you're embarking on something that seems personal, but has to be rooted in the historical. I mean, not only the archival research that I did at libraries, and that takes a long time, because going into these archives is very different than just going in and checking in a book. You have to sign in as a researcher. Sometimes you have to be given approval, so that takes weeks. You have to go in kind of with your gloved hands.
Oh,
You
yeah.
are sometimes able to take photographs and sometimes
How
not.
did you even know where the archives were?
So this is the Librarians are your saving grace for everything. You go to a librarian with a question and they're going to help you find an answer.
Wow.
So I knew from just cursory research that some of the Central State Hospital, which is now the name of the Central Lunatic Asylum, Central State Hospital still exists in Petersburg. They are now a full service hospital, and are no longer segregated, of course, but also are no longer just helping those who have been designated mentally ill. And so I knew that those archives still exist, and lots of them were at the Library of Virginia, which is our main
Oh,
state library in Richmond, which is about an hour and a half away from me. So that's where I started. And eventually I spent weeks there over the 7 years' time. And those archivists helped me start piecing things together. And then I started doing ancestral family research and ethnographic research, hours and hours of
Did it
interviews
get
with my.
momentum? Did you get energy as it did it spiral forward, or did you sometimes think, I just can't do
Oh
this?
no, I mean, it definitely gave you energy. Now, did I think I can't complete this project? Yes. But I'm a poet, so the minutiae is the stuff that really excites us,
That's it. It's the
right?
imagery. It is the
That's right.
dialogue. It
That's
is
right.
the aesthetic on the page. Every single page is a different masterwork. And I really know. Even I was showing my group, now the Ramika Bingham Risher group, was reading Neruda's Book of Questions.
Oh, yes.
And they read Ramika's
What
pages
company to
of
be in?
questions from the WPA. So just quickly tell us that how what the WPA was and how these chilling the questionnaire. You don't have to read it, but just tell us about it.
I won't read it. I'll just, kind of turn to it so I can see. Well, again, talk about research. That is a found poem. So none of those questions are my questions. When the WPA, which is
Tell
created,
everybody what it is. It's under it was under Roosevelt,
it's part of the
President
Works
Roosevelt.
Project Administration, right? And so coming out of the Great Depression, they're creating jobs for artists. And so writers needed work. And also, what the country realized kind of in that moment, this is, the 1930s and 40s, they realized that all of the people who, had any experience being enslaved, they're now in their 70s, 80s, 90s. These people will die off soon, and we have not collected any of these stories. So they decided that this would be a project for writers to go through, much of the South and collect thousands of these stories. So they would go and find folks who had been enslaved and say, "Can I sit with you and collect these stories?" Now, many of those stories, as you can imagine, are a little tainted because, a white person that you don't know comes to your door from the government and says, "Tell me everything about how you were treated." And you're going to say, "Well, it was a wonderful time.
Just wonderful.
I was from what I
I
remember,"
learned
right?
this is I learned these marvelous
Yes. Oh,
skills.
let me tell you what happened back then, right? However, my grandmother, Minnie, was her narrative has been anthologized all over. I had read it before I knew she was my great 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 grandmother because, as a scholar, it's one of the ones that we go back to often for several reasons. It's long. It's an extensive narrative, but I realize now it's long because she was interviewed by a family friend, a Black woman named Susie R.C. Bird, that was a teacher in the area that bought from her garden, that came to her, shop at the market, went to her and said, "Hey, Miss Minnie, I'm working on this project. Can you tell me about, what you experienced?" And so Minnie lays it all out on the line. My goodness, she's telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth,
But the
right?
questions were provided,
That's right. But the
and they're
question.
scary. They're really pretty scary questions.
When Susie was tasked with asking these questions, they gave her a questionnaire, at least at the beginning, that's about
Yes.
400 questions long. And so how do you decide? You can't ever get through 400
Yeah,
questions,
but they
but
were
it
so
gave them a place
dehumanized.
to start.
The
Well, some
questions.
of them were dehumanizing, and some of them were about the minutiae of things that even I had never thought about. Questions like, did slaves ever see the stars? Did you ever see falling stars? Were there slave vacations? Describe the way slaves danced. So it's like cultural, but also spiritual, personal, all of these things. And you can imagine some people ask these well, and some people ask them terribly. But that's why that list of questions ends up, it's not the full list, of course, but it's about 30 to 40 of those
Oh,
questions that I
you
think
just
so many
have to
days.
read us a couple more of those questions.
I'll read you a, I'll jump around and read you a few of the questions.
Just any.
Okay. Questions that still need answering from Questionnaire for Ex-Slaves, WPA. And they're all numbered. I start with question two because we know what question one always is. What is your name, right? But two, age. How does he know his age? Eight, teeth. Nine, voice. 10, eyes. 28, who administered punishment? 79, where did house servants sleep? 84, beds. 94, was it pretty? 115, who names slave babies? 134, casket or coffin? 153, did slaves ever sit down in the presence of whites? 175, did free Negroes ever beg from slaves? 181, how did Negroes get free? 228, what were the names of slave dances? 236, did slaves assemble at times just to sing? 242, did you see the stars fall? 311, was your former master in the Klan? 322, did you or your people build a home after freedom?
Well, we got the historical context, but you can't tell me that is not an arrow in the heart. That is an
Absolutely.
arrow in the heart.
And
Every
sometimes
one of
history is
those.
like that. Sometimes history is like that. So sometimes just looking at the historical record gives you so much more perspective and context than you could imagine.
You have given us more history than I think I even imagined, equal parts to poetry. And then to massage it and put it in line lengths and to get the imagery and then to get the resonance and then to get the repetition of words. People don't know what it takes to do this, but we know. And let's have another bit of reading, please.
Sure. I'll jump around just a little bit back to Mary's section because, you know, as we talk about history, you also think about, particularly in a story like this, where so much of her life revolved around mothering, and she was just coming to faith. She was one of Jehovah's Witnesses and was dealing with learning about scripture and learning to read and all of these things. But also, you know, I imagined how would you deal with that on top of what's happening during the civil rights movement? And so I'll read Remains of the Stained Glass Windows of the 16th Street Baptist Church. And this is in Mary's voice. The Kingdom Hall is small. There are no stained glass windows. But when those girls are killed in Birmingham, we are still afraid. A bomb, they say. Somebody in the town hid it on church grounds before Youth Day, set it for the children. They'll kill anybody for anything. A little boy with a limp, freedom fighters, soldiers, presidents, even come to God's house when it's convenient. Hate is like the shards of glass, pieces stuck everywhere for years. Some skin might shed it on its own, but the rest will burrow in. All winter, we look over our shoulder, all decade, all century. They'll kill Malcolm. They'll kill King. They'll kill another Kennedy. A drunk white man jumps the curb and kills my mother, holding her granddaughter's hand. That child will walk fine, but never recover. None of our daughters will understand. We'll return to supplication while some overreach God with their demands. We only preach. We don't march. We'll clean the rubble and lay many questions at the altar. Where does your kindness end? We ask our neighbors. They think we're a nuisance at their doors again with Bibles in our hands.
Where did you get that line? Some will overreach God. Where did you get that? What's going on with your brain?
It's revision. First of all, we know, Grace, you want it to look like sleight of hand, but these poems all go through at least 30 revisions a
Your
piece.
brain, your brain, your brain. Yeah, honestly, the pictures we can't even describe. They'll have to get the book. They must get the
That's
book.
right. Yeah.
I talked about form because that really is how we hold our art.
Yeah.
And at the end of the last section of the book, you have something like a crown.
It is, yeah.
On it. And
Yeah.
I just want everyone to know, she takes the last line of a poem, which becomes the first line of the next poem.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't notice, but
Yeah.
it has a power of that. So you don't do it with every poem, but
No.
tell me what made you want to do that.
Oh, that crown of sonnets was something that I came to for two reasons. One, it's called the Lose Your Mother Suite. So I was reading the work of a brilliant historian called Sadia Hartman. So if Sadia Hartman has a book called Lose Your Mother, where she's tracing her family's path back to the continent and thinking just a lot about her own place in the diaspora.
You have
And
time to
so,
read books?
yeah, you have to. That's part of the research. You know, you have to read. You know, I tell people I was reading really difficult, really hard historical nonfiction.
Did you ever
like
make
Lose Your
dinner?
Mother.
Did you make dinner? Did Michael ever get dinner?
I was like, yes, that cute, sweet man got dinner, but he got pizza mold and he got anything else. But also, you know, in addition to reading the really difficult his nonfiction historical books, I was reading Black women's romance because you got to balance this stuff out. Right? You got to balance it when you're dealing with really difficult, heavy history. There has to be
Oh,
some
that is
assured
wonderful.
joy.
That
That's
is
right. That's
just
right. So,
wonderful.
you know, pizza, you know, at least twice a week for dinner. You got to balance the
I
reading.
know. I tell my children I watch trash TV, but I do read
Thank you.
Shakespeare during the commercials.
That's
so gotta have it. You know,
That's
I
right.
know that you are a director, have a very important position as the director of quality enhancement plan initiatives at Old Dominion. And I said, perfect, because she is quality. She is enhancement. They named it after her. Just,
oh, did they?
What did you, does every university have one? And what do
That's
you do?
So funny. No, but all the universities that are in the southern region of universities have to have this quality enhancement plan, that it's a huge project that helps influence student learning in some way. So it's part of our accreditation. And our projects, we did one for 10 years and have just started a new one. The first one was about improving disciplinary writing. So it was helping faculty redesign assignments that help students write in their field. And now
Amen.
It's about pursuing truth, reading responsibly and thinking critically. So we're helping faculty design assignments that really help students
You
comb
have to
through
imagine
material
those.
and read. You know what I mean? Come
You
on,
make
that's
those
built for
up.
me.
You make up the curriculum.
I
But what a
get to
show off
imagine
are
the
you?
workshops, but the faculty said this is what we needed. We need
Big
better readers and writers. Yeah.
Show off.
Yeah, show off.
That's what you are.
Thank you. No,
Whoa.
But it's a real gift to be able to do what I do.
Imagine. So you imagine all these things and then you implement them and they come from your mind.
They come from my mind and the minds of brilliant others that you keep around you. I have wonderful facilitators. We just had our big, huge workshop of the summer all last week. I was with my faculty. So you see me beaming because I just got to see it implemented last week and really see how it makes changes in their courses.
Oh. What a life.
Yeah.
What a life you've chosen.
Oh.
What a life. Do your parents know who you are? I mean, they know you wrote the book. Like my parents read my stuff.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, do they really know what you're doing? Or do they just think it's nice?
I think my parents, if I said I am going to be a goat herder, they would say, baby, those goats are so fortunate. We love those goats. You're going to herd those goats.
So now we know.
You are going to be so great. So they, no matter what I'm doing, my parents are really the biggest cheerleaders. But I will say they follow this trajectory and soul culture, especially as it started, you know, the writing thing has started to become a little bigger. They've really followed it very closely. So they know more than you think you know. And my mother, because she is the family historian and really keeps
Oh.
a lot of this in her brain, she's been my first reader for my last
Oh.
three books. And she's been like, oh, nope, that's wrong. You said Aunt Sweetie and you meant Aunt Doll. You said da 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 and you meant. So she really and truly, like, she knows what I'm doing.
Oh,
She gets to see it first.
I didn't realize that she was your editor.
Oh, yes. Oh,
Oh.
yes, honey. And expects to
Oh.
be paid in lunches and, massages.
Fair, fair enough.
I think
That
that's
sounds
reasonable.
pretty
If you're going
equal
to get
to.
me straight, I think it's reasonable. Yes.
Well, we are going to have a final poem, but this
Children.
has been just the delight of the decade for me. And I can't wait till we get you back at the Library of Congress in person. But
Yes,
until
I can't
then,
wait.
we will hear a final poem.
Oh, thank you so much. So, I'm going to read. You mentioned Michael, my husband, a little while ago. And so I was working on this, and nobody gets an earful like your husband when you're working on a book like this. And so, I talked so much about, my God, like, it's amazing. How are
Oh.
we all here? I'm talking about all those things, and it's amazing that they cross paths. And he, very close to the end of the process, at one point stopped me and said, but where's that poem? You haven't written that poem. And I think that poem deserves to be there.
I get it.
And he was right. And he was
I
right.
get
So
that.
I wrote this poem, and whenever I read it, I give him some credit for the poem. There is nothing in your story that says you should be here. Let's just call it what it is, miraculous. Or nothing but time and chance, a hair's breadth of the divine sense of humor. What wasn't planned, but tickled everyone watching. First, the nearly indestructible forced onto ships. Then, babies born on plantations, surviving the South. Daughters and sons, impatient and fearless, heading north. A girl follows her sister from Norfolk to Fort Monmouth. A boy sees her picture on a mantle and vows to marry her. That was my parents. His father fell in love with a waitress in Petersburg who served him sweet potato pie and milk, a baby herself, and he, slick-sleeved, just stationed at Fort Lee. He carried her as far from there as he could, on and on this love, up the coast, in the heart of all wars. Children die and children gather. One finds another, and every star extends its hand to a new windswept door. There should be no possibility of you, but here you are, an opening, a crossing, and here. Every instrument brimming with sound, every seed a body inconspicuous in the garden. You are a spectacular disruption, a tempest. And with that knowledge that you have been remarkably made, call to yourself in the distance. The world will arrive to meet you, and you will not be afraid.
That is the voice of Ramika Bingham-Risher, and the book is Room Swept Home. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. The program is provided by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. And thank you to our funders, Natalie Canavor, Sandy Jackson Cohen, Avi Deshashani, the Sinipid Fund, the Rivada Foundation, and the Anne Arundel Arts Council. I am Grace Cavalieri, and our engineer is Mike Turpin.